Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Plodcast, presented by sportsshoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Plodcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, guys. This week, we've got one for all you fans of the coaching podcast. We spoke to Dave Reagan, coaches at Basingstoke Athletics Club, and obviously coached the likes of Ben Patterson, who medalled the bronze medal in the Commonwealth Games just last week. So we obviously spoke a lot about that.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. Thank you for tuning in once again in what has been a hectic summer of track and field. We're at the last major championships of the year. I think the Brits are going to dominate. They're going to sweep those distance medals, bring them on home for us. And if you haven't already, listen to the preview we did, because lots of interesting finds and predictions from us as well. Those of you who to look out for as well when you're out there. Talking of who to look out for, one man you should be looking out for is Ben Patterson after that Commonwealth bronze medal, after this season he is having. 144 in Trafford on a kind of blustery, wet night in July as well. So what can this man do? And obviously, Davon, the link, he's the coach to Ben. Incredible guy, incredible kind of story as well. And I think it's a podcast a lot of you out there can probably learn from. How do you coach someone who lives over 100 miles away? That's the kind of relationship they've got at the moment with Ben based in Loughborough, Dave based in Basingstoke. Talks a lot about the club system, developing athletes, the London 2012 legacy. That's actually how he got into coaching himself. And almost the crop of, what kind of a few results at a club can do to the rest of the club, the likes of, the generation that now looks up to Ben Patterson and Reese as well, at coming out of Basingstoke, two guys, 145 or quicker as well. Tom Staines, throw him in the mix. So a very good podcast, and I hope you learn a lot from it. So take care, enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
Dave, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on it, and thank you very much for coming on.
No, thanks for inviting me on, guys. Like I said to you in the message, it's a bit of an honour to be on here alongside the likes of Mark Hookway, James T, and the likes of that. So, thanks.
Yeah, first, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners then, and just explain who you've been coaching and what your kind of coaching role is in our sport?
So I've been in the sport for 30 years now. So 1992, I accidentally ended up in the sport. And then 20 years after that, I accidentally ended up in coaching. So, it's been 10 years of coaching now, quite a wide range, and I'm still doing the wide range to this day. So anything from 10-year-olds up to, obviously we've got the likes of Ben Patterson in the top lot, And working around that, it's a bit of a juggling act, but we like to see that there's a pathway right the way through the club, rather than just working in silos like I think a lot of clubs do and like we have previously. So, at the top end, we've got Ben Patterson. We've got Reece Charmignol, who's currently out with Colorado up in Pueblo. And we got a few other guys. Tom Sycamore running well this year. He's run his first sub 350 this year. So, we've got quite a few good guys around us at Basingstoke at the moment. Like I said, I do work with the younger guys as well, though. So making sure they're ready to make it through to the top ranks with a bit of luck.
Mm. Yeah, very much like a club focus at the heart of your coaching then, by the sound. So talk about how you accidentally, one, fell into running, and then two, accidentally fell into coaching.
I think it was kind of my family's fault on both parts. Well, it definitely was. The first time I ran was actually at a race. So my sister was going to a cross-country league, and team manager said to me, "We're a bit short of boys today. Everyone's out playing football. Do you want to come and race?" And I misheard or didn't listen. I don't know which of the two. Probably not listening. Sounds a bit more likely. I thought I was going to go and play football. So... next thing I know, I'm on the start line of a cross country and finishing 21 out of 23. But loved it. So the following week, I was down at the club and training, and it kind of all started there. Fast forward 20 years to 2012, My mum was a coach, so she coached the very youngest kids in the club. And one night after Super Saturday, they had 92 kids turn up. And they said, hang on, we might not be able to deal with this. So they skimmed the top lot off that group and said, can you help us out with this? So I took, I think it was 12 of their older, more experienced guys, who were still 10 at the time. But they start between 7 and 10 in their group. So I took a few of them, started coaching them when I could around training. And yeah, it went from there, piggybacking on the back of other groups so that I could still train and coach. And yeah, from there, it's become more coaching than running. So yeah, and here we are today.
Yeah, mate, it's not often you kind of, I guess that is the 2012 legacy. It's not often you actually hear success stories like that. And a part of me wonders if you weren't there at that moment in time, what would have happened to those 92 kids as well?
Yeah, who knows? I'm sure someone else in the club would have picked it up. But yeah, my mum likes to get us involved, and she has her way of persuading people. I think if you you ask a few of the volunteers in our club, it was her behind it and pushing them into the role. But yeah, there's certainly some talent in that group around that time. And you've got the likes of Ben, who followed very shortly after that, and have been with us for about 10 years. Some of the guys are still about at the club now. So, yeah, like you say, a lot of the 2012 legacy that was talked about at the time seems to have fallen a little bit flat, and it maybe wasn't carried on as well as it should have been. I think there's some missed opportunities there, perhaps, and likewise, off the back of London 2017 and who knows, maybe even off the back of Birmingham, because I think there's some good opportunities to be had there. A lot of inspired kids and adults alike.
Definitely. I'm sure we'll get kind of in deeper on some of those discussions a bit later on. But I just want to touch upon, you mentioned the kind of pathway, being able to see from 10 years old right up to the top end of the group. How important is that? Because that's not something we see, I don't think, so much anymore. I think that's something we've seen historically in our sport. But these days, it seems once athletes get to a certain level, they often go off. I know, obviously, Ben trains at Loughborough University as well, but he is still very much coached by yourself and part of that group as well, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the pathway is critical. You get an opportunity to embed those sort of values, good habits, before you actually get to the performance end of things. So we like to very much undercook the guys through the age groups. And yeah, again, with Ben, we were very quick to point out when he was young that being at the top of the age group rankings, brilliant. But if you look at a lot of names on those lists, under 13, under 15, all time lists, they don't make it all the way through. So yeah, it's very important for us to slow play it and hold back on some of the stuff we could have put in earlier. But, you know, it made absolute sense to look at the bigger picture. What are we aiming at? And where could he be? Where could some of these guys be in 5-10 years' time? Not everyone can see that. And I appreciate it's very nice to be performing well or absolutely the best you can be at the time. But, yeah, trying to instill that in the younger guys and their parents, because the parents are often the driving force behind it. Yeah, it's quite hard to get that message over sometimes, but yeah, a few do get it and are happy to sort of hang fire a bit and work with you on that. So very important.
It's a tricky one as well, because I feel like Ben's age group is one of very few where they have been so talented through the younger generations. You know, he's come up with Max Bergin, I think Finlay McClure, Dustin, those guys, and they've all been running incredibly quick throughout the age groups, and now they're all at the top now. And I agree with you, that is very rare it happens. And am I right in saying Ben ran, was it 154 as an under 15? Is that
around? Yeah,
you know what I mean? So these are crazy times. You know, 2 minutes for an under 15 is an exceptional time. He was running 154, so you say you held back. I dread to think what he could have done if you weren't held him back. And yeah, how did you manage that?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, these guys who are at the top of the game and who have the potential to be right at the top, you can see that it's clear as day. Some do take a little more development, but someone as talented as Ben, you could see he could be world class 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Right.
So yeah, the 154, remember that quite well. We were down in Millfield at the BMC, and I was pacing the race, and I couldn't actually get to 400. I had to step off the track before the bell. And there was another lad in the race who pushed him quite hard, but he ran that 154, went top of the all-time under 15 rankings. 2 weeks later, Bergen took it off him. So they've been sparring partners for a long time. And like you say, having Dustin and McClear around and the likes of those, Ethan Hussey as well, a little bit younger, it just pushes it all on. You know, to make these teams, even the age group teams, they were having to run quick. The guys who went to Sweden in, was it 2019? I think the under 20 European champs out there, Bergen won the trials in 145 and they had to run 146 to pretty much get in the team. So yeah, doing that at under 20, it's really made everyone have to raise the game. And I think we've seen that in the depths of 800 running over the last couple of years, and even 1500 as well. These guys are just driving each other forward at a silly rate.
Yeah. When you're developing, Ben, in your head, were you thinking, okay, 1920, we'll be at the stages now, Commonwealth bronze medal? Or were you more thinking, okay, 1920, these would be the development years again, and kind of looking at that sort of 23, 24 mark? Because I think it's hard to really judge, isn't it? And you have to take, you know, when, for example, Ben at the moment, when he's hot, and you kind of, okay, you want to develop, but you have to take your chances now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're at that point where we've still got a few levers to pull, but like you say, he's on fire at the moment, and we are taking the opportunities. We've had to tweak a couple of times through this season just to make sure he is right on top of things. For example, just before he ran his 144 up in Trafford, he was worried that he couldn't hang with the first lap, which I think was rubbish, but you know, in his head, he couldn't do it. So we needed to address that. So we spent a couple of weeks on speed work. He went and ran a 400 and just get that set in his head. And, you know, a week later he goes and runs 144. So yeah, he's had it in him for a while. It was just getting it out, getting the right races. Unfortunately, where the event is so strong, he hasn't been able to get into the right races. He's been winning most of his races this year. So yeah, he's put himself in a much better position now.
Well, that's the thing with the depth of kind of 800 meter running, although he's a youngster and there are kind of, I guess, still some junior competitions, I think, with the depth that it is, how do you go about planning for a season when you don't really know what championships might be available to someone, even someone of his caliber, just because there's so many athletes at the moment competing at that top level in the UK?
So we planned up until the British trials, basically at the beginning of the season. We said these are the races we need, and his agent Dave Scott's very good at getting races lined up, telling him what's available, and then following up, getting him into to what we can. But again, with British 800 running being so strong, some of the other guys who have run really well last year were taking the top races above him. So, yeah, it was very much a plan up to the British champs and see what came of that. Unfortunately, he wasn't there on the day, British champs. He had a bit of an off day, which is quite rare for him. We really don't know what went wrong that day, but yeah, it was a bit of a blemish on his otherwise great year. And I don't think I've seen him get like that about a performance in the past. It hit him quite hard. So from there, he was very much looking to put that right. And again, that's why a couple of weeks later, we saw it. Luckily, before that point, he'd already had his Commonwealth selection. So he had something to look forward to. And then we started planning towards the Commonwealths. Europeans were then selected a day or two before Commonwealth started. I think it was so. It was very much a work towards Commonwealths once we knew we had that. And then we've had to go off the back of that. So not much time in between to change it round. But no, it'd be good to go next week.
Yeah, it could almost be a blessing for him, you know, not going to Worlds and, you know, having those commies in Euros where he can really develop. Like earlier in the year, I think Tim Hutchings was saying about how they should be used as development races, you know, these the commies and the Euros. So, but, you know, interestingly, we talk about races and I think a lot of people, you talk about race quality, and especially in the 800. I sometimes think like Ben ran his personal best at Trafford on a, do you know what I mean? On what was, you know, not a beautiful day by any means as well. You know, you wouldn't say the conditions were perfect. And sometimes I think it was 800s. Is it better to have a clear run and be in a position he's in, you know, confidence on that last lap kicking away from someone like Elliot Charles, as opposed to you look at his Commonwealth run, there's no way you were going to run a quick time out of that race because of there's so many guys who are so good, so close together, pushing, shoving, overtaking, accelerating, all of that.
Yeah, I mean, each have got their merits. And yeah, who would have called that, you know, we're chasing all these races throughout Europe and it comes in Trafford of all places on. And it wasn't a completely still night up there.
So, that's what I mean, yeah.
It was a little bit blowy, but it's sort of a realisation that we've come to this year because both of us are still developing as a coach and an athlete. And yeah, we sort of realised we can't really force those times out. You know, we've got to carry on racing and they will come. He's quite a savvy racer, despite what you might think after his Commonwealth's final. yeah, it's and I think we have got, although the weather conditions aren't always there, we've got enough people in Britain now to set up these races. And I get they don't always want to go head to head because it counts against their selection, potentially, if they do get beaten by the other guys. But yeah, there's potential for fast races over here. I mean, you look at Giles two nights ago at Watford.
Yep.
23:36 down there, and he wasn't on his own. So.
And a 1:46.800, I think, from McMurray. So
yes, yeah, and that was close as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you know, on the line, yeah. To see many guys sub 1:48, you know, sub 3:40 is good, very good.
I thought Ben Murphy's run was particularly good as well.
Hookway will love that, Dave.
Yeah, no, you're bang on though, and I think there it is just a bit of cat and mouse over who wants to race each other here, because there's plenty more than enough athletes, especially in the 800. I feel like once, as long as there's a pacer who takes him through the first lap quick enough and then a couple of guys willing to chase it, it's almost, you'd rather that or something that's super quick that you can literally sit at the back of rather than anything in between. It just gets a bit messy, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like Matt was saying earlier, is it best to be in a wide open race or a sort of bunched race? Mm. Yeah, it's, if it is strung out super quick, you've got more clear air. There's no chance of getting boxed in. You've got your own space to run in. So yeah, I think, and again, we've seen races that Bergen's in where everyone behind him has run a quick time.
Yeah. You mentioned just then about just before kind of how you're still developing yourself as a coach, and you're almost developing together with your athletes, like the likes of Ben and the likes of Reese. How has that helped then? Does that actually help that you're kind of learning at the same time and almost growing your coaching relationship as the athletes grow themselves?
I think yes and no. So a lot of the guys that are coaching the top athletes have been there themselves. They've been internationals themselves. I don't have that advantage. So I'm seeing these champs, sponsorship deals, all this sort of thing for the first time as well. But at the same time, I don't have those preconceptions of what it used to be like, because the sport is changing. Kit deals are changing. Races are changing. Footwear, obviously always a hot topic, but I don't have those preconceptions. So yeah, we, especially me and Ben, we bounce off each other quite well because he's a very smart guy. He has always been tuned into what's happening. And quite often he'll say, I want to try this year, or this week, can we do this? And he knows if I've got a big problem with it, I'll put a roadblock up and say no. And he usually respects that. But likewise, if he comes up with something, it's like, oh, hang on, yeah, that's probably better than what we were going to do. Then we'll slot it in. And yeah, it's a very good back and forth relationship. And we've got that with a few of the guys coming up through the group now. We've got a couple of good under 20s coming through, and they're very happy to suggest things. And again, if I don't think it's a good idea, I'll tell them. But I like them to have a good grip on their own training as well, and understand what they're doing, because they will be floating off to uni soon. And they've got to deal with it themselves. Basically, it's very hard to coach someone properly when you don't have eyes on all the time. Mm. It's fine if they're right under your nose, but yeah, when you're 100 miles away, you've got to trust in their decision making and their knowledge of the processes they're going through.
Well, here we are. That's a good point, because you're probably someone who's done that very, very successfully. So any tips for people going through a similar setup, you know, whether that be an athlete or a coach, because you and Ben have obviously flourished under that relationship.
Yeah, and I think it goes back again to the having knowledge of those people and growing up with them. So you get to know them very deeply as a person. It's, if you don't know someone that's 100 miles away, you don't know their sort of personality inside out. It's very hard to tell whether they're actually struggling with something or not, because you can gauge very quickly on a phone call if someone's not quite right. Mm. And I think it also helps if you integrate with the setup that they're in. So Loughborough, obviously, it would be absolutely stupid to try and do our own thing. When he's surrounded by all these, you know, great athletes, they've got good coaches up there. So he does a lot of work with Sonia and Chris McGeorge. So and I think they have a decent amount of respect for him and the athlete that he is. So, yeah, you know, he's got people up there, Josh Lay, Matt Stonier, Luke Duffy. And Ben West's up there as well. Kyle has obviously gone into coach up there. So he's got this amazing setup. So we kind of tie in with what they're doing. And when we need to get specific, we step away from it. But the support that he's got up at Loughborough is incredible. And the feedback from the physios, the strength and conditioning guys. So it's not just a me and Ben. If we need to go around the side of that sometimes and get someone else's feedback, we can. So yeah, he's in a very good place. And likewise with Reese out in Colorado, if we need to know what's going on out there, we know he's in good hands. Yeah. Really good group set up out there. So
yeah, this might be a cheeky one, but you know, how would that Loughborough setup compare to an American university?
It's slightly different. It's slightly different to what I know of the American setup, because people have obviously got a better understanding of it as me. I've only ever seen it within one college, one university. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a small setup there. So working under one coach, they've got one physio that came in. It's very different, whereas Loughborough is very much a world-class setup. And he's also got the support of British Athletics up there because of the Futures programme, which has been fantastic. Point of contact, Dan Stepney within the Futures programme has been great for us as well, and touching base and setting up any support that he needs within British Athletics for us. The only difference, I guess, is that the guys out in America, they have to race within the college system. Mm. You know, apart from Bucks, there isn't much pressure to perform within that system, so we can work around that. And part of the scholarship at Loughborough, you are almost expected to put your hand up for the Bucks a couple of times a year, whether it's indoors, cross country, and then the outdoor champs, which isn't a bind because it's at the beginning of the season. So, we saw he got a great race with Stonia at over the 1500 at Bucks. And would you think a few months later, you'd have a Commonwealth bronze medalist and a 3:32 runner? I wonder what everyone else in that race is thinking now.
I know the improvements over such a, you know, we're talking 3 months. I think that's, you know, what confidence and stuff can do to you, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And they were all talking about the noise in the stadium. I don't know if you guys actually went down to Birmingham at all, but
I was there for one, a couple of sessions. It was very good.
That noise, and you could especially hear it when it was across the other side of the stadium from where you were. Mm-hmm. Just a wall of noise hit them. It was an incredible place to be. So.
Yeah, you mentioned fitting in with kind of the university groups and stuff. One thing Matt and I kind of discussed before getting you on was actually how different we think 800 running has kind of become in recent years. Whereas I think in the past it's very much seen as a middle distance event, and you're an 8:15 kind of guy, no matter who you are. And it seems that recently the 800 has become its own sort of event. And is it harder then to become part of these groups that are university setups? Like Matt and I know ourselves, it's traditionally like a cross country 1500, 5K type generalized session. So to actually pick and choose when you hop in with the main group sessions, is that harder when you're training specifically for 800?
Yes and no. I get what you mean. The sort of the top end of each event is making it harder and harder to flip between two events, whether it be 4 and 8 or 8 and 15. Training wise, I think there's very much the crossovers still. And the way in which Loughborough break down their sessions, they have almost the same session, but they have an 800 meter version, a 1500 version, and the 5K version. And we've found we just slot in with whichever one is most like what we would be doing back home. So, yeah, absolutely. I think people are pigeonholing themselves into events. You do get the people who can cross over quite well. Giles, for example. But is that just because he is that good? We've even seen it from... mine's gone back now, very few of the guys are able to cross over as well as they used to be, but I think that's just because of the depth that we're now seeing.
Yeah, I think the only guys I can think of is obviously Whiteman himself, and I thought you were going to say Whiteman. It's like he's done it, he's forgot the world champion. Whiteman seems that traditional middle distance guy, and I think like Lum says, it's just becoming such a niche event, and it's interesting. How much strength work would someone like Ben, or do you feel an 800 meter runner actually has to do these days, given that they all seem to be coming from a little bit more of a 4.8 background, if you like?
It's definitely important to have in there. Is it the most critical element? No, but you need all these. There's a lot of elements that you have to supplement your training with. And the conditioning side you get from the gym work is... you know, it's absolutely critical to get the whole package. So we have a couple of gym sessions in and a lot of core work. So yeah, it's it does need to be in there, but I don't think it's one of the top few that absolutely have to be in there. But yeah, to be at the very top level, you've got to hit it from all angles, haven't you?
Is that something which is quite hard to get right, the gym work? For distance runners, especially like me and Ollie, and probably yourself even, the background we come from, that gym work is kind of do it when you feel like sort of thing. Hence why we're probably not at that level. But is that something which is quite hard to get right, an actual gym program which is, you know, can have a lot of impact?
Again, we're very lucky to be supported with the Loughborough guys who dial in that program for him, go through it, and you know, off the back of the battery of testing that they do at the beginning of the season, especially towards the beginning of the winter, what do we need, where are we lacking, and those guys there very much look after the program. I'm stupid when it comes to strength training. you know, in real world terms, what do I really know about the gym? It's you know, no snippets, but not enough to give him exactly what he needs, and you know, the finite details in the difference of movements. So yeah, that's very much looked after the strength guys at Loughborough at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned some testing then. Is that something that you do not just for the gym but everything? Is there kind of, at what point do you start thinking about next season? So even now, are you already thinking, how am I going to start planning the winter and going into next year? Or will you wait till after Europeans and then assess it then?
We usually have a sit down after the season and throw everything on the table. you know, what have we done well? What have we done wrong? Where do we want to be? Where do we need to be? So, yeah, it's right this second. There's obviously some thoughts going around our heads, but it's very much get on with what we've got at hand at the moment. You know, he's got a very important week coming up and probably one race off the back of that, and that'll be it done for the season. So, I think any thoughts of what we're going to do down the road is not irrelevant, but it's a distraction right now. There's more that he can be thinking about focusing on than worrying about what he's going to be doing in November. So that's very much for us to worry about right now and see how the season finishes up, and then we'll shoot it all out after that. I'd say we sometimes get testing in at the beginning of the winter, and then when he is either due to go out to a training camp or come back, just to see where we need to tighten up. So his LT2 was one of the areas that we focused on 2 years ago. And we've seen a steady improvement in that. Last winter, we had a real deep winter, something that he hasn't focused on before because of either indoors or, as I say, slowly developing those miles and bigger sessions. The last lot of testing we had showed that had improved dramatically. So it's nice to check on the things that we're doing well, and also just to make sure there are no holes in it. Usually the guys doing the testing are pretty happy with where he is, to be honest, and said, you know, we usually see one area that is a lot weaker than this.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to ask is, naturally, does he just have a very good mindset, a very confident mindset? He strikes me as someone who's very confident going into the races, very little self-doubt there. And does he work on that at all? Do you guys talk about that? Or does that just come easy for him?
He's just always had that, and it's really annoying. Like, can you at least show that you care a little bit or that you're slightly nervous? No, he's always been that way since he was a kid. He doesn't really get nervous about things. He obviously cares about what he's doing, but he doesn't work himself up about it. As I've said earlier, he's a really switched on guy, so we can rely on him to give feedback when he needs to. Any sort of niggles, anything that he's felt hasn't been 100% in training. And that's what makes him easy to work with as well, from a distance. His feedback is probably unparalleled with any of the other guys that I've gone near. It's really annoying when he's getting ready for a big race. I'm absolutely bricking it, nervous as hell, and he doesn't care. Luke Gunn even said before the final of the Commonwealths, he'd just been giving him grief about Bucks cross country all day. And he's very laid back, but he knows what he has to do when he gets to that start line. So he's very businesslike. He doesn't mess about with sessions or stuff. He absolutely gets what he needs to done. But at the same time, he comes across as if he just doesn't care.
Does that make it harder for you then, obviously, with the other athletes you coach? Obviously, you've got kind of this experience at the top level where I guess it's quite easy for you in terms of psychological work. Does it make it harder for you then when you go with other athletes who maybe aren't so kind of naturally confident going into races and things?
Yeah, a little, but I'm terrible with races myself, so I know exactly how these guys are feeling. I can overthink a race for about a week before I actually get to the start line and then usually run like an absolute hack. So I'm kind of used to being in that world. It's very nice for Ben to have it, but with the other guys, I know exactly what they're experiencing. And coaching has to be an individual thing. You know, you can't coach two people the same way. It just doesn't work. If you want to get the best out of someone, you've got to get to know them, know the intricacies of what makes them tick, how they operate, and what training suits them best, what their lifestyle's like. So, yeah, it's nice to have with Ben, but with all the other guys, it's, you know, we've got young under 20 guy who overthinks everything. He will know exactly who's in his race, what they've done, probably what time they've eaten lunch. And it's just like, calm down a bit, please. but he's doing well this year. So obviously something's working.
I was going to say, you know, off the back of, you know, the likes of Ben, Reese, these guys run incredible times. How has coaching changed down at the club? You know, have you seen a change of attitude with the people you're coaching and the atmosphere down there?
I think a lot of people obviously look up to those guys, and where some of the guys that are still with us at Basingstoke have trained with them for however many years, they suddenly realise, you know, it's not that out there, because they don't always train out and out like 144, 145 runners. They're right in the mix with these other boys. So I'm like, hang on, why am I running this? If they're out there doing that. So it's spurred a lot of guys on, I think. And especially with one of our under 20s who has quite honestly had a bit of a patchy attitude towards athletics through the years. Although he's been down at the club about 7-8 years, he's never been that dedicated. And he'll disappear for a month at a time and then come back. Very talented guy. We had a bit of a chat, shall we say, at the end of last season. Sort of said, if you actually want to go anywhere, you're going to need to be here every single week. And he's gone and improved. It was something stupid, the improvement in his 1500. He went from about 420 odd last year down to 353 this year, and was considering trying to qualify for the World Youth. So, you know, for that mindset to shift like that, realizing what it takes, because again, seeing these guys and how they operate at a high level changes the focus of the young guys, seeing what they actually need to do to achieve anything.
I totally agree, and it's something that I think we've lost over time. When we look at, you know, our sport is kind of founded on the club system. When we look at the club system, there hasn't been many people, many elites that go down to their club that the youth can look up to and realize what it takes. So I think what we've got is a whole generation of people not realizing, you know, what they, you know, how they need to train and what it takes to kind of reach that highest level.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a shame in a way, isn't it? I obviously understand why these guys need to be in these hubs of other sort of high performing athletes, but we had 5 middle distance athletes at the British Champs this year. So we had
some incredible numbers. That must have been nearly the highest out of every club.
It's not bad, you know. And we are a small club. And most of the guys, you know, because around us we have Aldershot, we've got Southampton, Winchester, we've got all these big clubs around us. So we don't get people feeding in from other areas. But yeah, in the women's 800, we had Gemma Finch. We had Maddie Dedman in the 1500. And then in the 800, we had Reese Benn and Thomas Staines. So, yeah, for them to be able to see them on TV. We also had decathletes up there. So for them to be able to see them on TV was brilliant. And it seeing the club vest up there inspired a lot of kids. But like you say, out of those 5 middle distance athletes, only one of them trains at Basingstoke. Mm. Got 3 of them in the States, one of them in Loughborough. And so they don't get to see them regularly. Every now and again, one of them will come down. But it's our job does do quite a good job of making them visible though, through social media and stuff, and trying to bring them a bit closer, making them realize that they are part of the club still. And I think that works well for some of the younger guys.
Well, I think that's key. You know, when we talk about, you know, inspiring that next generation, having that conveyor belt of talent, I think you really need that, you know, in your club, you know, that, you know, they need to be in touch with these people. Otherwise they kind of reach, for example, an under 20 could be the quickest man in the club, because he doesn't even know about the guys who are training in Loughborough in the States, you know, because he never sees them. And obviously our sport, British Champs, is on TV, but if they're not a British Champs, you know, they might be running incredible times, doing incredible things, but chances are you're never going to see them compete.
No, and I think that's, like I said earlier, with the pathway, So every now and again, for the top guys in some of the younger groups, we like to just shove them in with the older guys. Just say, look, this is where you're aiming at. This is what you're heading for. Mm. And there was a under 15 that we had. We threw up into the main group earlier in the season. And we said, you've got two 145 guys in the group with you tonight. And he said, do you mean 155? Like, no, 145. And I think he even went a little bit pale. But yeah, he was suddenly buzzing about the fact that he was getting the opportunity to train with these guys. So yeah, developing that pathway, and again, making them realize it's not a massive jump, because I kind of float between the groups. Mm. And you know, one night I'll be working with the young guys between 10 and 15, and then they know the same person's working with the senior lot. So we're quite lucky there that I've also got the support of, with the younger lot, I've got my sister, who really does a lot to support that younger group. And we've got two other assistant coaches there, Jamie and Caroline. And then in the older loop group, we've got Barry and Martin, who do the majority of the running of that group. But yeah, the feed between the two groups, very important from my point of view.
Mm. And that's the thing, like, things like this are so important within clubs, but I think we're realising more and more they're so important within, I guess, the UK as a whole. I think Matt said on the podcast after Whiteman won at the World Champs, Whiteman is still seen as a normal guy, if you like, and that he's still seen amongst domestic runners as a normal athlete. Like, obviously, he's competing at the top level, but they do recognise that he's come up through the club system, he's gone to the university in the UK. He doesn't seem so untouchable as maybe even someone like Laura Muir seems kind of more out of reach compared to some of the athletes coming through. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I know I'm not the first to say this, but we're kind of losing touch with that club system. You know, the amount of races that we get that are now under the banner of a club, leagues are very poorly supported. Luckily, things like the national cross country champs and stuff are still going, but I don't know that we really get the front end of that anymore as much as it used to be. I think that's a fight that very much needs to be fought still, and getting the club system supported so that there is that, you know, inspiration rather than just there's someone running in a Diamond League somewhere. And I absolutely get that that's where they need to be to get the races and performance that they need. But yeah, just somewhere in between, because I think there's a lack of good national guys running at leagues and champs. I mean, the England champs this year, track, yeah. Poor fields. I mean, to go straight finals in I know it's not the British champs, but to get straight finals in both middle distance races. Mm. And I think even the 5,000 was only about 9 people in it. So really poorly supported. And I think somewhere there should be a pathway where maybe the top 10 guys get through to British champs, top 10 on times, but then the rest are fed through county area national champs and they have to go through that pathway to qualify.
I've always loved that idea. I think it's one which has been discussed quite a lot actually, but yeah, we should have a different qualifying system in to make it to British champs, I think, because yeah, spot on, it would just make people race and compete domestically. I think, you know, just moving on now, we've got the European champs next week. Who knows what's going to happen. But you know, one thing I've had a couple people ask me actually to make sure I ask you, and it's you know, how does one go about sort of tapering for an 800 meter race, and do you really taper for an 800 race, considering how much, you know, you can race 800s in a short window?
Some people don't. But I think it's important to, you know, got two races back to back on Thursday and Friday, hopefully, and then another Sunday. And I think going into that first one fresh, especially where we're at the back end of the season now, we don't really need to be putting too much more into him. At this point, he's not going to gain a lot. So we've done a session this morning and we're almost ticking over until next Thursday now. So right. I think it's very important. Yeah, I know some people do go heavy right the way in though. But I just think, you know, it's quite realistic now that those heats might be high 145, 146, with the amount of people there are able to run that. I don't think it's going to be an easy champs at all. There's no real standouts, but there are hell of a lot of people in that 145, 145, 144 window.
Yeah. What would a taper session, I mean, not what would kind of that last crucial 800 session look like for one of your 800 meter men?
So we didn't want to go too deep, but we wanted to turn over. So this morning we did 450, 350, and then 3 200s. Just off nice big recoveries, going through at race pace. Just not digging himself into a hole, because he's got to fly out to Munich tomorrow. So obviously it's not ideal to have a travel day on very heavy legs. He's had a heavy week last week. Not so much physically, because there was such a big gap between the races, but mentally, for someone his age at his stage of the career, it's fried him a little bit. Although he deals very well with it, there's a lot of mental energy expended for champs like that. So, yeah, trying not to put him on fumes into this. We know everything's there. The hay's in the barn. We just need to keep his legs rolling.
Yeah, and what was just back to the commies, I guess, like what was your initial thoughts going into it, and then obviously the reaction itself? Because I think if you just look at them on paper without their ages and experience and things, you think, yeah, he should be right up there. But obviously young athletes, you don't really know what is going to happen at these major champs.
No, and his mentality sort of comforted everyone in a way that he's not too worried about who's who. He was very confident that once we got to that final, because I think that's the hardest thing in 800 sometimes, is actually getting to the final. Once you're there, unless there's a standout, it's very much anyone's for the taking. We were hoping it was going to be a bit of a quicker race. I think it would have thinned out the field a bit. When we got into it, I felt sorry for the people sat in front of us, basically, because I swore at him the whole way around that race. about the first 600 metres, I was screaming abuse at him. And it was doing nothing for him. He couldn't hear me, but it was helping me out. He was just lucky that he had the closing speed, really. You know, he was good enough to get himself out of that spot. An absolutely horrible race to watch. And first thing he said, he came over to us in the crowd and he just went, "I'm so sorry." And he said, "That was an absolute shambles." And I said, "Yeah, I know it was. Yeah. But go and enjoy yourself." So, off he went for, I think it was about a half hour victory lap, seeing people and chatting to him in the crowd. And he was so late back for the medal ceremony that Luke Gunn had to run down and grab his tracksuit out of the warm-up area. So I think bought him out of retirement. Getting down and getting back, but he absolutely enjoyed the moment, but he realized he'd messed up a bit and put himself in an awkward spot. So
I think when I watched it, I kind of knew he always had the ability to get out of the kind of mess, if you like, he was in. And I kind of was like, I kind of knew he's going to get a medal, but it was what color. I think there was more there, obviously, and you probably know that as well. So hopefully we can see that at the Euros. But I don't want to kind of jump back too much, but I just think before we finish, it'd be nice to kind of, because one thing in Ben's development he did was he did flick between the 4 and the 8. And I wonder if, given him those different goals, kind of growing up through the age groups, did that help him, really focus? Cause sometimes if you just do 800 year on year on year, by the time you get to 2021, you're just like, oh, really another year of just 800s. So did that kind of change up when he was, 16, 17. Do you think that helps him?
Do you know what? That was not my decision. That was him and his dad decided that would be a better path to go. So his dad actually took on a lot of the coaching at that point. So he'd come down and work with us in the group, but his dad was steering the ship at that point. And absolutely now, I feel like it gave him it's given him an extra weapon. But yeah, at the time, I couldn't see that as a great thing. I thought it took his focus away from the eights. I wondered whether he'd ever go back to the eights, knowing full well that that's where he should land. But yeah, they took it on themselves and they said, you know, 2 years of this, and then we'll come back to the eights. And like I said, I didn't believe for a second they were ever going to come back to the eight. But then, yeah, when he got out of the under 17s, he said, right, there he is, back to you. Let's go back to eights. And yeah, he came straight out and ran a 151 as first year under 20. And it's like, all right, that's, yeah, maybe that's done him some good. And by the end of the season, he was a 146 runner. So
that's an incredible story. And I think as a coach at the time, that must have been very difficult for you. And I know a lot of coaches in our sport who would have probably struggled with that. And that would have been the end of the relationship. It would have, Ben and yourself would have kind of parted ways at that moment in time.
It did stress it in some ways, I think, but I've always been a believer if someone wants to be doing something else or believes they should be doing something else, then you've got to let them do that. Otherwise, they're going to resent what you're doing with them and not be fully committed. So, it was a little bit of a struggle. And like I say, I think we butted heads over it a little bit. But yeah, as I say, ultimately, if someone wants to be somewhere else, you've got to let them do that. And we did actually say before we went to uni, you know, do you want to look at one of the coaches up there? He said, no, things are working. It's like, we'll stick with this. If we can't manage it, then we'll change. But I think there's a lot of ego in coaching, isn't there? And very much, what can you do for my profile? We've had a lot of offers of help since he started running well. but yeah, I'm always slightly dubious of, do these guys have the best intentions for Ben, or are they looking at, a little bit of a profile kick? But again, that's quite a nice thing about working with them from a young age. You get to know them, get to know their families, and genuinely want to see them do the very best and set themselves up. And, you know, in reality, 99% of these guys aren't going to make a living out of athletics. They're not going to go on to perform at a high level. And most of them probably just duck out the sport because they don't want to do it anymore. But if you can set them up through the age groups to be a little more confident, learn some lessons about work ethic and stuff, then that's kind of our job with the younger ones. Obviously a different story when we get to the performance end of things.
Yeah. Look, I think that's a great place to end, because I think it's just interesting how you're still thinking about all those things, even when you've got athletes getting Commonwealth medals, but at the same time, you're coaching a group that's got a bit of everything, but it's nice to see.
Good. Yeah. It is very important to us. And like I say, it's my mum and sister are very much involved in what we do. So it's quite family orientated, and it's good to spend time with those guys down the track.
Yeah. Well, hopefully a few people get down Basingstoke on Tuesday night.
Yeah, let's hope so. Fingers crossed.
But no, I'll finish up just saying, you know, people like you are just a little bit of an unsung hero, if you like, because I think when a lot of people think of Ben Patterson, they might not necessarily know the story behind it, and yourself and the work you put in as well. So I hope we've kind of shared that a bit today.
Yeah, hopefully. But we'll see. We'll carry on to turn up down the track, get these guys through.
Good.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on the pod.
I really appreciate time, guys. Cheers.